Earlier this week, Arlene Foster said that Ulster Scots should no longer be treated as an afterthought and should be, quote, embedded in our education system. The DUP leader was writing in the Ulster Scot newspaper, where she also said Ulster Scots needs a strong presence in the media. In the Belfast Telegraph today, the former DUP MLA, Nelson McCausland, described the party leader's article as important and a thoughtful consideration of culture. No surprise there. Arlene Foster and Nelson McCausland know each other very well indeed, obviously. Nelson and the party until very recently. But what do you think today? Do you want more Ulster Scots in schools and in the media? Nelson's with us now. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. And the TUV leader, Mr. Jim Allister. Good morning to you, Jim.
Good morning.
So set this out for us, Nelson. What's the thinking here? Why do we need more?
Well, of course, in the article that Arlene Foster contributed to the Ulster Scot, and also in my own article in the Belfast Telegraph today, the focus was on two main issues. You've honed in on a very specific point, but let me just set out the broad picture. Arlene Foster was saying, first of all, that for her personally, that the history, the heritage, the culture, the tradition, the language of the Ulster Scots is something that matters to her. And she set out an analysis of that, and also an analysis of cultural diversity in Northern Ireland. That was very significant, because that's one of the first times that I've ever heard a senior politician actually do that. It's something that has often been avoided in the past.
Yeah, but what does that tell you? Example. Why hasn't she done it until now if it's been so important to her?
I think that we could ask that question of unionism and politics in Northern Ireland probably for the past, well, we're coming up to the centenary of Northern Ireland, and it's something that could actually be asked of previous generations. I think the important thing is that here and now, Arlene has actually done that, and it's very significant. She's done it in a thoughtful way, in an analytical way, and I'm sorry, I'm actually
Why don't we ask Jim Allister for his reaction while you're getting yourself sorted? Go ahead, Jim.
Well, I've read Nelson's article this morning. It's really a slavish rehash of what Arlene Foster had to say, with one significant omission. He does not rehash the critical sentence in Arlene Foster's article, which said the focus must be upon practical measures with a legislative underpinning. And that was the DUP leader signalling consent to legislation, the primary Sinn Féin demand in respect of their hobby horse, the Irish language, her signalling it in respect of Ulster Scots, to set up the fig leaf for the climb down that the DUP is engaged on the Irish Language Act. In other words, Arlene Foster saying, well, if there's going to be an Irish Language Act, whatever we call it, then there must be legislative underpinning for Ulster Scots.
But she has,
well,
but
one's
she
a fig leaf to cover the other.
But surely, Jim, you know as well as the rest of the country knows, Arlene Foster has said there will never be an Irish Language Act under her watch. Never.
I've heard the DUP saying many things about never, and live up to very few of them. But, you know, I think that's what's been set up here from the DUP point of view is to agree to some form of legislation covering Irish language, where they don't want it called an Irish Language Act, but maybe they think it could be called a Language Act or a Culture Act. And part of the fig leaf for that is Ulster Scots. But I thought there was a far more insightful article in this morning's press from the Grand Master of the Orange Order, who probably epitomises the whole Ulster Scots tradition better than any other organisation. And he has an article in which he includes this critical, all-important sentence, which says, any legislation, no matter what it's called or how it's packaged, which underpins the Irish language in a legal framework, will have massive implications for local government, the courts, the civil service, schools, and everyday life in Northern Ireland. The Grand Master has nailed it. And I think the challenge to Nelson McCausland and to others who are flying flags to take us towards Irish language legislation is how do they assess, how do they respond to the very clear, incisive call cogently put by the Grand Master today in the newsletter.
Yeah. It's not a surprise to find that Jim Allister looks for an opportunity to attack Arlene Foster, attack the DUP. That's his normal position. But he does a disservice, a deep disservice, to the people of Northern Ireland, not only this generation, but future generations, if he ignores some things that Arlene Foster said there, which are hugely important. Arlene Foster has been very clear that there will not be an Irish Language Act. It's been said again and again and again.
But will it be dressed up just under a
different
name?
No, it won't be dressed up under something. I'm sure it won't be. I'm not part of a negotiating team. I'm not part of that process in that way. But I think what is the headline in the Telegraph today is the most important thing. What she said there was that as you look at culture in Northern Ireland, and she took the example of Fermanagh. She said, you go to Maguire's Bridge, there's the Maguire family who were Irish. You go to Brookborough, the Brook family were English. Irvinstown, the Irvine family were Scottish. And she says, here in Northern Ireland, we have a rich, diverse cultural history. We're a cultural tapestry, a cultural confluence where things met together. And she makes that analysis, that very fundamental analysis. She also goes on to say that as we are dealing with cultural traditions, we need to do that in a way that builds a better future. And she analyses that with, and she doesn't mention it in her article, but there is sound academic research. There is a good relations framework for what she's doing. It's not something that is there to be used or abused in the way that Jim Allister
but Nelson, for
just an opportunity to attack the DUP. That's ridiculous.
But let's address the point. Hold on, Jim. Let's address the point that Jim has raised this morning. He has said that he has noticed a crucial line, a critical line in what Arlene Foster has said, which is that the Ulster Scots must be underpinned in legislation, okay? And therefore, he is saying that is a fig leaf and that is preparing the country for Arlene Foster to be rolling over to Sinn Féin's demand that Irish language, an Irish Language Act, by its very definition, will be underpinned by legislation. And it's obvious what Arlene Foster is doing. That's what Jim Allister
has
said this
morning. Because Jim Allister does not want to discuss the issues
that
Arlene
Foster... But is it untrue? But on that point...
No, it's not true. I'm sure it isn't.
How are you sure? Why does she want Ulster Scots underpinned by legislation but not the Irish language then?
What she said there is that, first of all, there is an analysis of culture which hasn't even, Jim Allister hasn't even mentioned today. He's no interest in that. He's quite happy, by the way, to have, I suppose, like fundraising Ulster Scots nights for the TUV. He's quite happy to lobby in the past for the Ulster Scots tradition and, in fact, did that many years ago. We're not aware of it more recently, but it's certainly a long time ago.
But he says he still
that.
Does. He still
well,
said it.
I'm aware of it when I worked in the sector. Jim, you had a good chance there. Let me just say that all of those issues he has totally ignored because I think the reality is these are the things that are at the very heart of trying to build a shared and better future in Northern Ireland. Jim may not want that. I think most people do.
Let's let him respond.
Let's be very clear. I have no difficulty with promoting the Ulster Scots culture. I do quibble over whether or not there's something worth promoting when you call things an Ulster Scots language, but that's a different argument. But the key issue here is this, that Nelson has slavishly repeated all of Arlene's article virtue, with the exception of the sentence that was critical. And therefore the challenge to Nelson is, does he support the underpinning of Ulster Scots with legislation? And if he does, how then does he hope to deny the underpinning of Irish culture and Irish language with legislation? And isn't it patently a rollover process whereby we claim that we get legislative underpinning for Ulster Scots at the same time as giving the legislative cover to Sinn Féin for the Irish Language Act with the consequences that the Grand Master has spelled out this morning? And the question that Nelson needs to answer this morning is, does he support legislation underpinning Ulster Scots? And if he does, how does he then deny it in respect of the Irish language, it being quite clear that he's setting up one to concede the other? That's the question for him.
Well, Hume's making assertions for which he has absolutely not one shred of evidence.
Just tell us, do you support legislative underpinning of Ulster Scots?
There are issues around culture, particularly in the field of education, where currently there is preferential treatment for the Irish language. Would Jim acknowledge that?
From a government of which you were a part?
Sorry, would Jim acknowledge that?
From a government of which you were a part?
The preferential treatment for Ulster Scots goes back to what, Jim?
For Irish language, you mean?
For Irish language. What does that go back to?
Sorry,
where did it come from? Where did it originate?
Well, let's not play Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Jim's keen to make assertions, and he obviously thinks that he knows the subject very well. So let me ask him, where did that legislative priority, prioritisation, superiority in regard to the Irish language, where did that come from?
Well, it came from several places, but there were demands in 2006.
It came from several places. What were those places, Jim? Do you not know?
Yes, well, I do know this.
Well, tell me this. Tell me what they were, Jim.
Just a moment. You've asked a question. I do know what the law says, and I know that the law in the Northern Ireland Act, Section 28D, which was put in consequence of St Andrews, the St Andrews Bill, put in this clause. It doesn't require an Irish Language Act. It doesn't require an Ulster Scots Act. It requires, in respect of both, a strategy. And that's what Sinn Féin settled for, by the way, after St Andrews in the legislation. And all this nonsense that there was some unfulfilled promise is exploded by the fact that Section 28D of the Northern Ireland Act, put in 2006-07, only requires a strategy. It requires a strategy on the Irish Language Act, and it requires a strategy in respect of Ulster Scots. And Nelson, of course, was a Minister of Culture and was very happy to be guided by that. And now he seems to be on a bandwagon that's saying, we need legislation for Ulster Scots. We do not, because it is opening the door to the same legislation and worse for the Irish language.
Since he couldn't.
Just so that I'm clear, Nelson, just a succinct answer to this. Do you support Arlene Foster's request, demand, call it what you want, proposal, that Ulster Scots is underpinned by legislation? Do you support that?
I think that there may well be some form of Culture Act, which would protect the interests of all the people of Northern Ireland equally and fairly.
Okay, and now, what would be, and now, this is important, this is at the heart of the government not being brought back again. So can we just walk through this slowly so that everybody understands? And what would be the difference from a Culture Act, which presumably Arlene Foster might embrace, and an Irish Language Act, which she has said would never happen under her watch? What would the difference be?
Well, first of all, whatever a Culture Act might be, whatever the proposals put forward by the DUP might be and the proposals put forward by other parties might be, that will emerge in any negotiations.
What would the difference be in your view?
An Irish Language Act, first of all, and I noticed Jim missed this out, an Irish Language Act would breach the best good practice in terms of giving priority to one cultural tradition and one identity over another. That's a fundamental point. I made the point in the article. I know Jim didn't pick it up. You haven't picked it up either. There's a lot of things in what Arlene Foster said, a lot of things in what I've said here that haven't been picked on because they actually help us to get to a better place. It's far too easy to have a programme like this where people turn up and they have a go at each other and you think this, you think that. What Arlene Foster did in the article was produce a reflective, analytical, well-informed analysis of culture in Northern Ireland. The point I was making there was that about 20 years ago...
But culture in Northern Ireland also includes Irish language.
Includes...
So if it's a detailed analysis, it does not include Irish language.
No, she was writing in the Ulster Scots.
Exactly.
But if you read the actual article, you've got in...
I do. I've got in front of it.
But good. The full Arlene Foster article, is that...
That's the full Arlene letter. Let's just continue. We're fine.
Yes, fine. I've got it in front of me here now. In it, she's writing into the Ulster Scot newspaper and she talks about her children being at school in Fermanagh, the benefits that many schools already have had from the provision of Ulster Scots interventions in the schools, opportunities to enjoy the culture, so on. He talks about her, one of her children there learning to play the pipes in a presumably in a pipe band. She speaks about her own interest in it, the influence on the language, the history of the place. Now, that's the core element of the article. She then goes on to say, if we're looking at culture in Northern Ireland, how do we do it in a way that takes away the division, the deadlock, the disputes? I know programmes such as this thrive on debate, dispute and so on. But in the future of Northern Ireland, we need to find a way through a lot of these issues in a way that builds a shared, a better future. And one of the things I picked up on was that a piece of work that was done about 20 years ago by two very, very good academic researchers at the time in the University of Ulster. And they made the point that if you're looking at cultural issues, you do not go down the road, which is the Sinn Féin road, of dealing with the interests of one community only and the demands of one community only. You actually look at cultural traditions in a holistic way. So, for example, in the BBC, what sort of provision does the BBC make for the Irish language, for the Orange tradition? What provision does the BBC make for the Ulster Scots tradition? And what she's saying here is we need to have a framework for culture in Northern Ireland where all cultural traditions, whether it's Irish, Ulster Scots, Orange or whatever, all of those traditions have their place and have it recognised.
What's wrong with that, Jim Alistair?
Well, it's quite clear that Nelson is embracing a cultural act, which will not be exclusive, of course, to Ulster Scots. It will be equally embracive of the Irish language tradition.
What's wrong with that? If we're all living in this country together, what's wrong with that?
Because we already have the legislative protection in Section 28D of the Northern Ireland Act of a requirement for parallel strategies for Ulster Scots and Irish language. And that, till now, has been acceptable to Sinn Féin and the DUP because they wrote that legislation effectively. And that was the outcome of St Andrews.
What are you so worried about? If you actually make this real for people in Northern Ireland, what are you so worried about that we will see and feel in Northern Ireland if there were to be a culture act? Well, how do you see Northern Ireland changing?
A culture act that met the demands of Sinn Féin
would say
would make Irish an official language of Northern Ireland on a par with English. It would create the right to use Irish in all our court proceedings, all our legislation, our assembly, in our councils. It would require affirmative action in order to meet the jobs demands in favour of those who speak Irish. It would put all our road signs on a par, Irish content on a par with English, and it would set up, according to the Sinn Féin demand, an Irish language commandant, a commissioner, and if you didn't cooperate with him, you would be guilty of a criminal offence. That's what the Sinn Féin demand is, and if that's translated into legislation, whether you call it a language act, whether you call it an Irish language act, or whether you call it a culture act, that is going to do exactly what Edward Stevenson says in this morning's newsletter. It is going to change the face of Northern Ireland beyond all recognition by ramming down all our throats. As part of the Sinn Féin culture war, the Irish language tradition. And that is what I'm opposed to, and that's why I say it's totally unnecessary, and that's why I'm disputing the fact that we need underpinning for Ulster Scots as a fig leaf for underpinning of the Irish language. And sadly, Nelson has reached the point where, for the sake of DUP office, he's prepared to embrace a legislation which would be a fig leaf for Irish language legislation. It doesn't matter what you call it. It's what it contains. And that's the road the DUP, as a climb down, is taking us.
Well, quite frankly, Jim just degrades himself the worse he gets. The truth is, he talks about for position and advantage. I have no position, I have no advantage. I am not an MLA. I will not be running to be an MLA. So there's no personal advantage.
You're very close to the DUP.
I'm speaking for myself. I write in the Telegraph for myself. I don't write as anything other than Nelson McCausland and as someone who has a keen interest, as you know, in Ulster Scots for many years. First of all, personal thing. Secondly, all those horrific things that you listed there, every single unionist that I know, every single unionist that I meet is resolutely opposed to and will not be conceding any of those things.
Hold on, Jim. You've got to let him finish. But Nelson, affirmative action is currently a demand of Sinn Féin.
And, like, no unionist party, no unionist is ever going to agree to that.
But it's currently a... Sinn Féin have publicly said to this programme
that
Carol McCullen's proposals are the basis for their negotiations. I then checked with a senior source within Sinn Féin who has confirmed affirmative action is what they want, part of what they want.
And I just find this quite surprising. No unionist party, no unionist could ever agree to affirmative action in terms of employment, having spent so many years rightly castigating and rejecting affirmative action in terms of the membership of the PSNI and the 50-50 recruitment. The sort of affirmative action that Sinn Féin had been talking about was actually described by the late Liam Clark, writing in the Belfast Telegraph some years ago, as almost like a job creation scheme for some people. And this is quite clearly something that no unions... Jim, would you just let me finish?
Let's let him finish. But the question is, what would be in this Culture Act then that would appease Sinn Féin?
Well, the question is, do you go into negotiations to appease Sinn Féin, or do you go into negotiations to try and get the best future for the people of Northern Ireland? Now,
and what might be in that would bring Sinn Féin along with the DUP to restore government? What would it be? What would the compromise be?
One of the things that Arlene Foster talked about there was resource. So let's take an example here of the BBC. You could have written into legislation a requirement that the BBC provide a fair and balanced and equitable broadcasting regime for different traditions.
Hold on, let's let him finish, Jim.
Broadcasting is something that is very much of importance to the people.
Not devolved to Stormont.
Thank you, Jim. I am well aware of that. I've talked to the BBC, I've talked to Westminster about broadcasting on many occasions. The fact is that I'm giving that as a simple example of the way in which you could have cultural equality in a way that it's currently denied. You could equalise the Treasury spend in terms of the two broadcast funds so that people from my cultural tradition get the same amount of resources as others.
But
you could look at education and you could say that in our schools, children, as they should have already, should have the right to learn about the culture and traditions of the community from which they come. So you could look at the education system and say, is it currently balanced? Is it currently fair? Is it the case that the cultural experience of children in the Irish community is deeper than those who come from an Ulster Scots or other background?
But do you think in order to get things like that and reach compromise with Sinn Féin, do you think that the DUP would ever even contemplate the right for people in this country to have all street signs in Irish as well as English?
Sinn Féin don't just want street signs in Irish in terms of street names. They want all signage on everything to be in Irish.
Would that ever be acceptable to the party you know so well?
I don't think it's acceptable to the DUP, acceptable to the UUP, acceptable to any unionist party. And that's why Jim Allister
said in places like Wales, isn't it?
Wales is somewhat different from Northern Ireland because they haven't had the sort of cultural war that we've had here in Northern Ireland. That's a war that's been recognised for a long time, way back in the 1990s even. Arthur Ockey was writing about culture.
Would you have any objection to someone who sees Irish as their primary language having their court case held in Irish here in Northern Ireland?
It would be an absolute nonsense to even suggest that for this reason.
Well,
how would you ever get a set of barristers, a set of jurors, whatever, required, involved, set of officials who would have the competence in Irish to even do that. They've had difficulty in the Irish Republic even doing that.
Translators, what happens if someone's here and...
Look,
and
that's why it's so sad.
Portuguese is their primary language.
And there is a way in which you can deal with cases. Yeah, there are very few cases. But if you're getting a serious court case where there are a lot of barristers involved and people are requiring documents translated in the way that has happened in places like Wales, the scale of that is astronomical. This is something, this is a scare thing from Jim. None of those things, but I'll make this point. Sorry, what I would say to you, Stephen.
If you look at Cal McCullen's proposals, it does talk about the right for people to...
Absolutely. And that's why people
use the language that they see as their first language, for example, Irish language. It does talk about that. It does talk about affirmative action. It does talk about all of these things we are discussing today. It does.
I think
Sinn Féin are saying that's the basis for their proposals to negotiate with the DUP.
And if they stick to that, there will be no agreement. I don't see how you can square that circle. I think that that's regrettable. It would be if Sinn Féin are so intolerant, so intransigent, that that's their position. That would be very regrettable. But what is also regrettable...
Didn't Arlene Foster say, Nelson, there's nothing to fear from the Irish language?
Well, there's nothing to fear from the Irish language, but there's a lot to fear from Sinn Féin. Fear is probably the wrong word, because confidence is something that unionism should actually have and something that confidence needs.
But help me with this. Help me with this thinking, because there's mixed messages here, surely. If there's nothing to fear from the Irish language, then why is there anything to fear from some type of Irish language act?
The difficulty, of course, is that we're not talking about a language. We're talking about a language that has been weaponized in the past by Sinn Féin. But what is...
But nothing to fear from that language.
Look, you can turn swords into ploughshares, as it says in the scriptures, and you can turn ploughshares into swords. And the problem is that what was cultural wealth in Northern Ireland was turned into a cultural weapon by Sinn Féin. It was damaging to the Irish language, and I've met quite a number of Irish language speakers, particularly from the Republic, who have said that very thing, that Sinn Féin is actually damaging the cause. In fact, we had an Irish speaker from Northern Ireland making the same point yesterday. But what is also regrettable, Stephen, is that what was put forward in that article, and a very good article, and a very thoughtful article, and one that's reflective, is simply set aside so that it all comes down to what you think about the Irish language. That is something that is regrettable, because our thinking about this should actually be shaped by what can we do to affirm other cultural traditions, other identities, in a way that removes the current imbalance. The Belfast Agreement and the Anglo-Irish Agreement entrenched the Irish language in a way that was inequitable and unfair. We need now to find ways in which we can rebalance this and create equity culturally in Northern Ireland.
And Jim Alistair, what Arlene Foster is doing and some of what Nelson is saying here this morning, they're trying to reach compromise on behalf of everyone in Northern Ireland.
Trying to reach equality and equity.
Jim?
Well, I think the problem is, and, you know, rather reluctantly, Nelson has come to the point of conceding that he's looking for a cultural act which embraces not just Ulster Scots, but also the Irish language. But where he has been less than forthcoming, in consequence, what would be in that act? We know what Sinn Féin demands to be in it, and we've been through that, and it's utterly outrageous in every sense. But what is it that the DUP is minded to concede on that? That's what we haven't heard, because it's quite clear that this is premised and choreographed as an attempt to reach an agreement to get jobs back, to get their jobs back at Stormont. That's what it's all about. But so what is it?
For Jim, it always comes down just to the nastiness against the DUP. It's impossible for him to have a rational discussion about culture without going down that road of being particularly vindictive and nasty and unpleasant. And that's one of the characteristics of Jim over a very long time. Unfortunately, it tends to poison. It becomes a bit toxic.
Everybody knows that the payroll interests are overwhelming the issues.
There we go again. Simply becomes... It's not a discussion about culture for Jim. It's just personal animosity.
We wouldn't have this article in the Ulster Scots, or we wouldn't have your article in the Belfast Telegraph, if there wasn't the crisis at Stormont and the desire to get things back.
Okay, we just got to take the news very quickly here, and then we'll be back with both Jim and Nelson.